We're going to have Brad Free join us. And meanwhile, while we wait, let me give you James Scully sent in his pushes on the weekend. And today, actually, he's got one at Churchill, the 9th. He likes that Hero's Reward. And let me pull out today's and mark it so that I can remember. Ninth race. Here we go. Hero's Reward on the outside. Gaffleone for the Catman. 10-1 on the 10 horse. And then tomorrow, that's a non-winners of two lifetime for 20, going 7/8. And then on Saturday, James is his best play. He likes Noble Order at 6-1 tomorrow, and Noble Order is in the 6th. That starts the sequence, actually, for those of you that are playing the single 6. And of course, that was hit last Sunday. The 6th race. This is the mile and an eighth maiden turf group. Noble Order, Brad Cox with Florent Giroux. And he also in the stakes, he's interested in, he's going to play it straight. Mia Mischief, who should be tough, you'd have to think, in the winning colors. And Julia Foxtrot, who figures prominent in the Mint Julep. So there it is. Brad Free joining us from the Daily Racing Forum. We talked to colleagues Jay Privman and Marty McGee earlier. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Looking forward to this weekend of racing. It's nice to be back into a regular groove out here in California. And, of course, we're all looking forward to watching Belmont Park open up next week. So the country is slowly coming back to life, and that's a good thing, especially for those of us in the racing game.
Well, and certainly when we talked last Friday, looking ahead to the Memorial Day weekend action, it absolutely came through. And whether it was, you know, in the grade ones on Monday or the races we talked about, the three stakes and more on Saturday, including, you know, you more or less, you didn't guarantee a Wild Man Jack win, but you were pretty emphatic about it, and he ends up firing a big shot, and a 104 buyer for him. We talked to Doug O'Neill the other day, and Mandela United, and then comes back with Jolie Olympica. It really did feel like the prime of the winter action at Santa Anita.
The grass races last weekend were terrific. And, you know, you're right. I did like Wild Man Jack, and it played out exactly like I mapped it out. I said that he was the clear speed of the field, and he rallied from fourth. I thought he would be a standout open-length winner, and he was up by a nose. He looked to me like an 8-5 shot, and he was 3-1 throughout the betting, cold on the board, and then finally went down to 2-1. So the only thing I was really right about is I picked the winner. The truth of the matter is, Steve, Wild Man Jack won. I think in hindsight, it was honestly not really a very good opinion. I mean, he got there first, but he was all out. He lugged in through the lane. It was not the same. I know the time was fast, 101.01, and he got a big number. But this is not the Wild Man Jack that we saw in Dubai. And the truth of the matter is, I was kind of disappointed in his performance. So It was one of those cases where my opinion was really not that great, but I'm not going to, throw the money back. So he got there first and won a very thrilling race over Sparky Bill. United, surprisingly, the second choice in the betting in the Charles Whittingham. The money came in on Chad Brown's Rock Emperor, who looked like the most logical alternative to United, and as turns out, Rock Emperor actually went off as the favorite by 10 cents over United, but United won the race by a nose. I'm certain that a mile and one quarter is not his preferred distance. He wants longer, and he'll get that chance. I think he's going to Keeneland for his next start, and then Jolie Olympica, you know, she only won by a half length. It was kind of a measured half length. It was very confident ride by Mike Smith. That was in the grade to Monrovia, going 5.5. And talking with trainer Dick Mandela earlier this week, it looks like Jolie Olympica is probably also going to be shipping out to points beyond, maybe New York, maybe Kentucky, uncertain yet. But Mandela said he looked around. There's really nothing for Jolie Olympica in the near future locally. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Jolie Olympica go out on the road. And this is a really cool filly. I mean, I think she's won 5 out of 6 now. And, you know, her only loss, she actually ran very well. So some good grass racing last weekend, and looking forward to a good grass race tomorrow at Santa Anita with the great three honeymoon stakes for three-year-old fillies.
The weekend action, and we'll talk about it. You know, we had a visit with Richard the other day, and he told us about Tis a Magician being sidelined, but just as quickly, Brad, he turns around and he's got that four-year-old, the older Warfront colt, that Border Town that looks like he's an emergent player.
Yeah, it's funny because it sounds to me like Mandela said the same thing to you that he did to me. When we were chatting earlier this week, I wanted to talk a little bit about United and a little bit about Jolie Olympica, and he kept on coming back to Border Town. How about Border Town? Boy, this horse is really coming around. Mandela likes this horse a lot, and when it, you know, there's sometimes trainers get a little too high on horses, but when a guy like Mandela starts talking up a horse that is really not yet, you know, great at stakes caliber, but certainly has the pedigree and recent form to be something special, you got to take notice. And Border Town is an up-and-comer for, you know, Richard Mandela. And that was an excellent win the other day. It was an 88 buyer speed figure, but he flew home. You know, it was an entry-level allowance race. He's now won 2 in a row, and this guy is getting good. He's a colt by Warfront, and who knows how good he's going to be, but like I said, when Mandela starts talking up a horse that's kind of unexposed in the as far as stakes caliber goes, you have to take notice. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, how far up the ladder Border Town can go. Right now he's a one other than allowance winner, but I dare say that probably big things are in the future for this son of Warfront.
You know, one of the stories that I tried to create a thing last weekend, Brad, I had noted on Sunday the two wins for the Y Gods, for Pam and Marty Wygod, and then they came back again with the other win on Monday, and essentially they three straight wins, one with Sheriffs and two with Cliff Sice. And you know, how often does an owner win three straight mounts with three straight starters?
Not very often, and it's not very often that Cliff Sice, you know, comes out with a first time starter whose name completely escapes me right now.
Secret Keeper.
But a very
Secret Keeper.
Win. I'm sorry?
Secret Keeper.
Thank you. Secret Keeper, yeah. And I believe that filly is a sibling to a two-turn filly that the Wygods had not long ago. And Secret Keeper, a daughter of Into Mischief. I was kicking myself after the race because Into Mischief fillies, they are, it seems to me, and I'm just speaking anecdotally, but fillies sired by Into Mischief, they win so many times first time out that it's almost like it should be a flat bet situation. And Secret Keeper came out firing, a daughter of Into Mischief, and she, you know, she ran well, and I think she wants to go long. And that was a very impressive, solid win. I think Baffert had a couple of well-meant horses,
yes,
in the race, including a first-time starter, and Secret Keeper just ran right past, and it looks like she can probably go longer than she went the other day. So it's nice to see Cliff Sice with some good stock. He's always been a top trainer. He doesn't always get the cream of the crop, and it's good to see Cliff Sice doing well with this very, very promising filly.
Well, and the sibling that you're thinking of, the full sister of Secret Keeper, is Into Chocolate.
Thank you. Yes, she was best, I believe, around two turns. I think she's still in training.
She
wanted to go two turns. So, you know, Secret Keeper, it's cool when you see a horse with pedigree and then backs up that pedigree with performance, and then you just think, how good can this horse get? You know, it's a maiden sprint win, so we're not going to get too far ahead of ourselves. but it was an auspicious debut by a filly with pedigree and obvious ability, and she's in the right hand. So some cool, you know, allowance caliber maiden special weight runners last week that will be fun to watch develop as we, you know, get into the heart of summer.
Speaking of developments, one thing that, you know, it was mentioned, and I think it was being, you know, obviously acknowledged on Monday, Brad, but how about Abel Cedillo winning the four, including the grade one, on Monday? He had won three on Sunday. I think he won, you know, 10 or 11 races, you know, between Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Well, Abel Cedillo has emerged as virtually the number two jockey in Southern California. Flavian Pratt is, he dominates. But Abel Cedillo, who rides more than any other jockey and wins more than any jockey except for Pratt, the guy's on fire. And it's amazing because he's a very quiet spoken young man. I don't know if he's young, but he came from up north, and he's really made a mark for himself down here in Southern California. In the 2 weeks since racing resumed at Santa Anita, Pratt is 17 for 55. He's winning at a 30% clip. But right behind him is Abel Cedillo, who has won 12 races from 60 mounts over the past 2 weeks of racing. He ranks second in the you know, post-closure standing. So Pratt and Cedillo are kind of, I don't want to say riding circles around everybody, but they have, obviously their business was terrific, and they're not making any mistakes out there. And Mike Smith, from just limited mounts, 21 mounts and 6 wins. So Pratt, Cedillo, and Smith are the three guys that have really kind of emerged as the hot jockeys coming out of the break. But you're right about Cedillo. His business is good. He can finish. I like this guy a lot. I mean, he's not quite in Flavian Pratt's, you know, at his level, but he's not far away. And he's a fun guy to watch ride, and he's a fun guy to bet on, as we've seen time and time again.
And I don't know if Tom Canoost, I think, is his agent. And
right.
I should really reach out to him. He's from Guatemala, and how many jocks come from Guatemala?
Well, if I had to put an over under on that number, I'd probably say a half. Might be the only one. I don't know. Guatemala is not a place that
not a hotbed.
No, it's not a hotbed for jockeys. It's certainly not Panama. We know that. So yeah, but. You know, I don't know Cedillo very well. I've spoken to him a few times, and he's such a soft-spoken, respectful guy. And, you know, he's just a joy to visit with. And it's nice to see, you know, when nice people do well, even when they beat you, you can't be too sour. So, yeah, you should reach out to Tom Knust. You know, he's really been a big instrumental in Cedillo's emergence as a top rider here in Southern California.
He's and in terms of age, he's 31, and he basically came to Florida from Guatemala and ended up in Ocala, where his dad was working. And he's a guy that, you know, it's not like he grew up being, you know, with a dream of being a jockey. It's the funniest thing. It's a cool story. And we've got to get to him, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. In the meantime, and until you do, you know, your listeners need to be aware that this guy can absolutely flat ride. I mean, I got to know him last year when I believe he was riding Paradise Woods for the Y Gods. And, you know, I think that I should not rely on my memory at this stage of the game, but it's very, very dangerous. But I believe that, you know, it was last summer and fall. In fact, he did. He won the Zenyatta. It was in, he rode Paradise Woods to victory in the Zenyatta, and I believe that he also rode her a little bit earlier in the year. That's when I still thought that Paradise Woods had a chance to win Breeders' Cup Distaff. Turns out she wasn't quite as good as I wanted her to be. But Abel Cedillo was instrumental in Paradise Woods' kind of reemergence last year to become a graded stakes winner again late in her career. And Cedillo was aboard, and the guy can ride. He's not a guy you can pigeonhole as, you know, he needs to be on the lead, or he needs to, you know, come from behind, or he prefers to save ground, or prefers to rally wide. He can do it all. He's just a guy, a jockey that, as far as I can see, really doesn't have a flaw. You can, you know, be confident that when you wager on a horse ridden by Cedillo, that he's going to give that horse every chance to win.
Well, and of course, he was Mongolian Groom's regular jock too. Ill-fated
right,
Mongolian
right.
Groom.
And you know, how about the Keeper of the Stars is you know, who rode to victory last weekend in the Gamely. I'm sure that Cedillo might prefer to have his ride back on River Boyne. River Boyne finished fourth in the Kilroe. He was coming into the race off of two perfect trip wins under Cedillo. You know, I thought River Boyne had faced a severe class challenge in the Kilroe, and he finished fourth. He ran an unbelievable race. Cedillo was unable to get over and save ground at any stage of the race, and it was just the way the race unfolded. His two previous starts, he was able to tuck in and get the rail trip, angle out, and kick against lesser company. But in the Kilroe, he kind of got stuck outside, three wide most of the way. The pace was hot. He was forwardly placed. And River Boyne, who finished fourth in the Kilroe, I thought he ran an unbelievable race. And even though, you know, maybe he's a notch below the Raging Bulls of the country, but he's not that far behind. And as long as River Boyne, you know, stays here in California, which I expect he will with California connections, he's going to be tough. So, that's another horse that Cedillo has ridden well. Didn't quite work out for him in the Kilroe, but definitely one to keep an eye on when River Boyne shows up next. Could be in the American here at Santa Anita, or maybe the San Francisco Mile, and I'm just pure speculating right now, but a good horse ridden by a good jockey.
Well, he's got nine mounts later today on the card, eight or nine. Well, I mean, technically, he's got eight because he's double named in that maiden claimer on the grass. So, really, he's got eight mounts out of the nine race card, and he's involved in the graded stakes. He's really riding for everybody: Lerner, Glatt, Cruel Jack, O'Neill, Miotti, Miller, Baltus, Mullins, Carava, Baffert, Knapp, Blacker.
Yeah, talk about a guy spreading his business around, and that's a good thing. You know, sometimes guys get kind of hooked into riding primarily for one stable, and you miss some opportunities. But a guy like Cedillo and Pratt, you know, also, you kind of get to pick and choose a little bit, and you can go for the best horse. So, it's good to see Cedillo riding for a number of different people. I think he's riding the most probable winner on the card today at Santa Anita. And she's going to be the favorite in race number three. But number one, Let's Get Wild. I'm going to be surprised if she loses this Calbred maiden race. It's 5.5 on grass. There's not a lot of speed in the field. She's quick enough to establish position inside. Worked well, and that's kind of a short price, you know, quote, standout to me. Let's Get Wild in race three Friday at Santa Anita.
That's for Eric Cruel Jack. Let's dive into Saturday, and maybe we'll even touch on at least the feature on Sunday. But you mentioned the Honeymoon, and since Cedillo's our focus, Laura's Light, the 5-2 second choice for Peter Miller.
Yeah, Laura's Light, she's a filly. If she wins this race, I'm going to end up probably having a losing afternoon. I just don't like Laura's Light in this spot, and I recognize that she's a good filly. She has been able to carry her speed two turns. She's a stakes winner. Her numbers are solid. It's just a different dynamic in the Honeymoon. It's a mile and one-eighth, which I'm not sure this is going to benefit Laura's Light at all, because she's the front runner, and I just don't know how far she wants to run, and she also will be chasing a filly who's very fast by the name of Parkour. So in order for Laura's Light to win the honeymoon, she's going to have to sit second, ration her speed, and get a distance that might be out of reach, or maybe she's just good enough to overcome the potential distance challenge. But at 5-2, I'm going to be taking a stand against Laura's Light. This is a really cool race. It's kind of the launch of the three-year-old filly grass division, at least in California. We've had a couple of stakes races that got scrapped during the closure, the Senorita and the Providencia. So all these grass fillies have kind of been on the sidelines, including the morning line favorite, who's the horse to beat, and that's number 9, Stella Star, ridden by Pratt for trainer John Sadler. And her U.S. debut was in the China Doll, and I loved the winner that day, Warren Showtime, and I was very lucky because Stella Star, I think, was length's best. She walked out of the gate. She got rank early. She launched an extremely wide move into the stretch. She came home in 23-1, flew late, and came up a half length short behind Warren Showtime, who got the all-time greatest trip, saving every inch of ground. Stella Star ran a winning race in defeat in the China Doll. That was back in early March. We haven't seen her since then, like many of these. But if she breaks with the field this time, and I, you know, there's no reason to expect she won't. She was a forwardly placed runner overseas last year. And if Stella Star can get some early position, I think she's going to be pretty tough to beat as the class of the field in the honeymoon. But there's a long shot in this race that I can't wait to bet on. And she's actually my second preference. And it's number 1, Geedy. Geedy, last year as a 2-year-old, was just a complete and total handful. She would break slowly. A lot of these Europeans never quite get the knack of breaking from the gate, but that wasn't the worst of it. The problem was she would get rank and pull and keen and just wanted to do too much during the course of the race. And, you know, you thought maybe she's just not good enough, but I think that if she ever learns how to settle down, she can become a good stakes caliber 3-year-old filly. Well, last time out in the China Doll, she did exactly that. She was ridden for the first time by Brice Blanc, and Brice Blanc does have a knack for getting horses to settle. He's a kind of a quiet rider, and yes, horses tend to come back to him. In the China Doll, Geedy settled for the first time in 5 U.S. starts. She did not get rank at all. She it was like watching a different filly run. And at about the 3/8 pole, right when Blanc wanted to get to the outside, Stella Star came outside her. She was ridden by Joel Rosario and kind of took the spot that Blanc wanted to go to with Geedy. So he kind of got stuck and had to wait. He had to wait a lot longer than he would have preferred. But Geedy finished well. She galloped out alongside Stella Star, and I'm fairly confident that Geedy wants every bit of this 1/8 distance. So because of the price discrepancy, Stella Star is 2-1, Geedy is 8-1, and Geedy should be every bit that number. I'm going to probably end up betting on the filly that I picked second, and that's Geedy, on the assumption that she settles again, gets a little bit better trip, and flies late, and I'll take my chances at that price. It's really a good, solid bunch of 3-year-old fillies in this race, led by the favorite Stella Star with a long shot look at Geedy. And like I said, I respect Laura's Light, but if she wins a 1/8 race, 1/8 turf races at Santa Anita are generally won from the back of the field, I'm just going to have to, you know, confess that I'm just wrong. But I like the two closers, Stella Star and the price play Geedy in the honeymoon.
Well, Brad, the fact that this race is one of the events that was imported over from Inglewood, a former standard on the Hollywood calendar, we should mention, I don't think I've mentioned it yet today, the official designation that the Gold Cup is going to be carrying the Hollywood Gold Cup moniker again. At least around these parts, we kept calling it the Hollywood Gold Cup. But now the trophy is going to say Hollywood Gold Cup as soon as, you know, in a couple of weeks.
Well, I called it the Hollywood Gold Cup for the last 6 years. This race
yes.
should never have been changed in the first place. The name of the race should have always been the Hollywood Gold Cup. And it's just a reminder of how petty some of these racetrack executives get. Because when Hollywood Park closed and Santa Anita took over the Hollywood Gold Cup, I don't know why there was such why the name had to be changed. It wasn't like Santa Anita was in competition with Hollywood Park. So it's nice that the name will be restored to what it never should have been changed from, the Hollywood Gold Cup. I don't know what took 6 years for them to make that change. And I'm just waiting for the Summertime Oaks. Maybe they should, maybe the name should return to its previous name, which was the Hollywood Oaks, 3-year-old fillies long on dirt. So, it's nice. I don't know what took so long. It's always been the Hollywood Gold Cup to me, and looking forward to watching the Hollywood Gold Cup a week from tomorrow run at Santa Anita. By the way, one of the top contenders for the Hollywood Gold Cup, I actually posted a workout this morning, and that's Higher Power. I think he worked 6 furlongs for Sadler, but I'm not sure about that distance, but he posted a workout this morning. He'll be one of the favorites in the Hollywood Gold Cup, and the nominations will be released this afternoon or sometime today by the Santa Anita Racing Office. So the Hollywood Gold Cup, renamed, restored its original name, which never should have been changed, and a heck of a card next Saturday. Not only the Gold Cup, but the Santa Anita Derby, the Santa Anita Oaks, the Cinema Stakes for grass 3-year-olds, a sprint for 3-year-olds on turf, and then a couple of cowbred races. So 7 stakes races next Saturday at Santa Anita, including the Hollywood Gold Cup.
Well, and I'm going to ask you for an opinion on a tough nightcap tomorrow, Brad, and where you landed in the maiden special weight, 1 1/8 turf race, 9th. It does feature an interesting pace play and a Nick Quesada homebred. I got to love it. Nick, the slam dunk team, and World Candy is going to stretch out from a 5.5-furlong turf sprint try and should be on an isolated lead.
Well, it should be. I wish I had something intelligent to say about this race. I looked at this race for a half hour, and really, I don't know what's going to happen. Other than the fact that you're right about World Candy, he's going to be loose on the lead. It's his first time around 2 turns. He's dueled on the lead last time going 5.5, and he faded. And he is an interesting pace play, and you have to love these twirling candies. He's still a relatively young sire, and his horses, they love the grass, and they can carry their speed. There's a couple concerns, not only the distance, 1 1/8 on turf. I mentioned earlier, generally closers hold the advantage at Santa Anita at 9 furlongs on grass. So World Candy's going to have to try to carry his speed at a distance that's not always conducive to that style. And secondly, the Richard Baltus barn, we are accustomed to seeing this guy win at a, 23 to 25% rate week in, week out, month in and month out. But over the last couple weeks anyway, the Baltus stable has been gone a little chilly. And, I don't like to get too heavy into these stats because we all know the cyclical nature of this game, and guys get hot and they get cold. But the Baltus stable has been uncharacteristically cold since racing returned. And that includes the time when Baltus was on suspension and his assistant Manny Marquez was running the show. They have not yet emerged from their funk, and that's just another reason why I'm going to probably steer clear from World Candy. I picked him 3rd just on the pace play. Drysdale has 3 horses in the race, trainer Neil Drysdale. Capital Call, who ran fairly well 2 weeks ago going 1 mile. He actually finished in 24 seconds. Drysdale also has a first-time grass horse by the name of Reprobate. And when Reprobate made his career debut in February, I thought this horse had the chance to maybe be a stakes horse. He rallied from the back. He galloped out like a beast. And I said, watch out for this son of Blame. Well, then he came back and kind of ran a flat 5th, and then he had all kinds of trouble finishing 4th at Fairgrounds. Now Drysdale's putting him on grass. I think this horse has more ability than he has shown so far. And Drysdale also starts number 7, Cosmo. My top selection, Steve, is Capital Call with no confidence whatsoever. I liked his comeback race. It was okay. I think the distance probably suits him. He's tried a mile and 1/8 a couple times and ran okay. But look, I'm not going to talk anybody off of World Candy. And sooner or later, the Baltus stable will emerge from its current funk. And maybe it'll happen with a lone speed play of World Candy. But that's a tough, tough way to end the Saturday card.
Yeah, agreed. That's why I kind of wanted to squeeze you for a thought. And I'm just pulling up the paper, and you got Bold Type tomorrow. Your best bet comes in the second, 3-1 Rossman. And there's that man again, Abel Cedillo, this for Jack Carava. And important for Jack to keep pace with Mark Glatt, so that down at Clocker's Corner early morning, Jack can arm wrestle with Mark Glatt.
Well, you see Carava and Glatt, they're together a lot. They have a lot to talk about in the morning. And Rossman, this is the perfect spot for him tomorrow. And he's 3-1, and I think he should be a fairly decent price in that low odds range. This is an interesting maiden race because there does not appear to be a whole lot of speed. And I think that Rossman is quick enough to establish position inside. He had that prep race down at Los Alamitos. I know he lost as the favorite, but I'm not going to hold that against him. Some of these horses go down to Los Alamitos, and it's nothing more than a schooling exercise for them to keep them fit, as opposed to continually working them out in the morning. They get an actual race in the evening. And, Rossman finished third, but he's run well at Santa Anita. He has enough speed, I think, to be forwardly placed. He's got Cedillo, and I don't know about these two favorites. Number 6 Sees the Day Rexy at 9-5. It kind of looks like he's tailing off. He finished second 3 straight times this winter, and then he was eased down at Oaklawn Park. And I don't know where he's at as far as fitness goes, and I know for sure he has no speed. And then number 2, Shanghai Curly, whose trainer Phil Oviedo is just a really good dude. And this horse is dropping from maiden 50 to maiden 25. Probably should respect him a little bit more. He's my second selection. But I like Rossman with Carava and Cedillo to win race number 2 on Saturday.
Nice. And the Sunday card highlighted by the Grade 2 Santa Maria. And I know the picks probably aren't in yet, but feels like a pretty nice showdown between Hard Not to Love and CeCe as they come together again.
Yeah, the picks are in, and, how can you not like CeCe? I mean, she emerged as arguably the top filly or mare in the country this year, and I say that with the recognition that Midnight Bisou is getting ready for her comeback at Churchill Downs in a couple weeks. But CeCe, I mean, she blew away Hard Not to Love in the Beholder Mile, and then she shipped down to Oaklawn Park, drew post 14 in the Apple Blossom, and wore down Ollie's Candy. So CeCe is the real deal. I mean, she is absolutely legitimate. She's versatile. She defeated Hard Not to Love by open lengths when they met in March. And I don't really see any reason to expect the outcome to be different. On the other hand, Hard Not to Love, even though she lost by more than 3 lengths in the Beholder Mile, and that was her first start around 2 turns, she actually ran a very solid race. She sped to the lead. She set insane fractions for that track that day, 45-3, 110-1, and then she was kind of spent in the lane. Trainer John Sheriffs and jockey Mike Smith both believe that she's probably a little better from a stalking position. Last time out, she drew the rail, and she kind of had to go. Well, guess what? She's down on the rail again, but I think that Smith might make a little bit more of a concerted effort to kind of ration Hard Not to Love speed and maybe let Fighting Mad go on with it. Fighting Mad probably going to set the pace coming out of a fast-paced sprint race with Cedillo aboard, by the way, Fighting Mad. There's only a field of 5. There's a horse in here that interests me at a price. I'm guessing she'll be a price. If you go back and watch the Apple Blossom and watch the final quarter mile of Horologist, trained by Richie Baltus, she was ridden in the Apple Blossom by Tyler Bays, and she got stuck in a bad spot. She had nowhere to run the final quarter mile, and it appeared, at least on video, that she had a ton of run, but she simply got bottled up in traffic with nowhere to go, and she only lost to Cece by 5 lengths. So there's still the class question with regards to Horologist, and we know that Baltus is in a little bit of a cold spell right now, but Horologist gets Flavien Prat on Sunday. Her sixth place finish last time out in the Apple Blossom was a lot better than it looks on paper. She has her work cut out between with Cece and Hard Not to Love, but look for Horologist to at least improve on her placing last time out. She could finish last and actually improve on her placing because there's only 5 in the field. But Horologist, she would be my price play in the Santa Maria, but Cece and Hard Not to Love, they kind of look like the class of the lineup.
Well, the class of the Southern California handicappers, the longtime lead analyst for the Daily Racing Form, Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won on Twitter. And Brad, looking forward to next week, a visit to go through the Santa Anita Derby card, which I'm sure is going to be the focus. Chris Mers and the team, I'm sure already have got working lists for a banner card. I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend.
Sounds good, Steve. I'll talk to you again very soon.
You got it. Brad Free, everybody. We're going to stay right here. Nick Tamaro listening in, and we say good morning to Nick.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And Nick, I should have actually included with the wrap-up with Brad, they've just released that Del Mar schedule of stakes that Brad Free and Hammer and Jay Pridman referenced earlier this morning. And specifically, the Shared Belief is going to be run on August 1st. August 1st, so 5 weeks out from Derby, and 50, 20, 10, 5 in terms of points for the Shared Belief. But you'll see the complete schedule out now. And Nick, before we dive in, Monday we talked, right, about the Saturday card, so we don't really need to talk Saturday, do we?
Correct, yeah, we talked about it and then went over to the Santa Anita Stakes, but yeah, touched on all the goings-on at Churchill, so I think we're all caught up.
Very good. All right, well, and of course, those results, Raging Bull, basically, clever handled by Rosario, watching the speed unfold, and swoops by and gets that second grade win of his career, and Keeper of the Stars, a breakthrough win of sorts to Jonathan Wong. We're going to get to Jonathan next week. I owed him from Wednesday, and things went sideways. Let's dive into this Saturday card at Churchill. Two stakes to deal with, but interspersed between the two stakes in the pick five, Nick, a very nice set of races. I thought this was a really fun sequence to handicap.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is a very good sequence. The stakes races obviously are tremendously interesting, and it starts with I think every running of these stakes races the first couple of weeks have been excellent, but a really good running of the Winning Colors and a race that's worthy of probably quite a bit better than the Grade 3 status. And if for no other reason than it just brings together horses like Break Even and Mia Mischief, both of whom come off tremendously impressive wins at Oaklawn. And Mia Mischief is a horse that, of course, has done her best work between Oaklawn and Churchill, and looked like a horse getting towards the end of last year that might have seen better days, but coming back off the layoff, she was just electric and beat Bellafina amongst a few others in that spot, and looked every bit as good that afternoon as she had been in the prior season. So it's going to be interesting to see whether she duplicates that kind of performance. I think she made out very well at the post position draw, and I feel like we were having this conversation about 5 weeks ago, talking about the carousel, and that she drew favorably where Bellafina did not. Now, that's not really the case between she and Break Even, because Break Even is just a one-way speed horse, and she looks like she's quite a bit faster than her competition in here. Looked as if she might have been going a little too quickly last time, but really responded favorably. Now, of course, there's a big difference between Mount Brave and Headland and a horse like Mia Mischief, but clearly it's Break Even's game to get clear of you and stay on it, and I actually think pretty much without hesitation. She's one of those speed horses that's a little bit better when she's allowed to go quickly. And looking back at last year's Eight Bells, I thought the Eight Bells was her best effort of 2019, and that was where she set the quickest pace of any race she was in, maybe other than the Coronation Cup, depending on what kind of pace figures you're using. But that being said, I think I slightly favor break even. I think it's a situation where you want to prefer speed to anybody stalking or making up ground, but Mia Mischief is just very, very tough, and you're going to end up using both of them. If there's anybody outside of those two that can be dangerous, I would use a horse like Bell's the One, who's coming back off a little bit of a layoff. Was totally ineffective on Mardi Gras in the Mardi Gras at Fairgrounds, and is a horse that was really going to be hard pressed to get there at 5.5 furlongs anyway. The six that they're going today is probably a little too short, but she would clearly be the beneficiary if there's any kind of early pace battle. Other than those three, I don't really see anybody else winning, and I think it's a leg where you can probably just use two A's in that one backup.
Fair enough. Let's get to the second leg. It's a maiden race going 1 1/16, and there's going to be a very prohibitive favorite, I would imagine, in Asham. Starts off at 8-5, but boy, when you break it down, and if you use second level performance figures like a Thoragraph, it's pretty glaring that he's got an edge on this field, it seems.
Yeah, he made a big prolonged wide move, which obviously is always gonna earn a good Thoragraph figure. He's no great shakes at 6-5 or 7-5 in this big field. Obviously, you have to use him, but I think there are a couple of alternatives that you'll want to throw in. I think all of them will offer some bit of value. I'm not a huge fan of the likely second choice, the Dale Roman's trained Bear Alley, who's going turf to dirt. I thought that Bear Alley was a horse that stood to improve quite a bit going to the turf, and did so, I guess, but you know, didn't run any kind of race that makes you say, wow, I really want to bet this horse back going to the dirt. I think the horses that you're going to be interested in making the surface, or in terms of horses that will offer some value, I mean, first and foremost is Mau Mau. Clearly, Bill Mott's horses were pointed to Churchill to an extent. They're running well, including a big win yesterday from Sprawl, and Mau Mau drew inside in a tough maiden special weight race, and now has that experience behind him, and I think that'll help his cause a great deal. So he's a horse that probably wants to be doing his running late. He's going to need things to unfold a little bit in front of him. And another horse that I would definitely use is Aztec Empire. I thought Aztec Empire made a wild, premature move up the rail two back when he was third behind Don Vito Corleone, who somehow can't seem to run anymore, despite me betting him two times in a row. That's an aside. But Aztec Empire then came back and really just got an atrocious ride from Joe Talamo last time. I went to the saddle with no plan whatsoever and ended up well farther back than he should have been in a race where they were just absolutely crawling, and he had no chance. So I think you want to bet him back. It's a huge jockey change to Santana, in that Santana's a guy who's going to keep this horse a lot more involved early, and so that to me is enough to want to include him as well. It's Asham's race to lose. There's no question about it, but I do think there's a few that you'll have an option of including that should offer at least a little bit of value, and it's probably a good thing that you can be somewhat thin in terms of your A's in these first two legs, because the ninth is a very competitive turf sprint where, you know, it's another situation where you've got a little bit of a pace scenario to worry about. It really boils down to how much speed Queen of Shade shows. And, you know, though still riding very, very well at this stage of his career, John Velasquez isn't exactly the kind of guy that generally sends horses flying out of the gate. And now making the barn change to Brad Cox, we'll see what kind of early zip she has. So, you know, it feels a little bit like this could be a scenario where a horse like Bingwa is very, very dangerous. And Wesley Ward won the nightcap yesterday with this jockey in a situation where he was coming back off a little bit of a layoff, similar to this one. And this horse has a ton of speed. She actually may end up being better on the dirt, but still has ran well on debut to break her maiden. Tough to take a lot out of that being a maiden special weight race at Belterra. But this is a horse that can be very, very dangerous if left alone. And clearly turf sprints are races where you need to be paying a lot of attention to how the pace is going to unfold. And another horse that I'm going to be sure to use is I'll Handle the Cash, who ran numerous races last year that would make her competitive in here, kept some good competition, was actually favored in a race won by Get Mother a Rose, who subsequently won the Honey Fox at Gulfstream over the winter, and then last time out didn't have anything go right at the Gulfstream against the likes of Girls Know Best and Violent Times, both of whom would be enormous favorites in a race like this. So I'm going to be sure to include her. I think both halves of the entry are capable of winning. You're definitely going to want to use them. I would say that Originator will benefit if her entry mate, Queen of Spades, shows some early zip. And if that's the case, then I think you'll see probably the winner coming from off the pace if there is that battle in Bingwood that does get some competition on the front end.
Well, there's one horse to throw into this mix, and getting back to the turf sprint, is Whimsical Muse. That is pretty tractable, in fact, and could set up shop behind whatever speed is unfolding. I thought that at 10-1, Whimsical Muse was dangerous.
Yeah, I think there's a reason to believe that. You know, it all boils down to what you want to do in terms of how you feel the pace is going to unfold. And you know, no, obviously pace dictates every race, but I think in turf sprints it's a little bit more exaggerated in the sense that you generally get it dictated by what happens in the first couple of furlongs. So if it is if there is a little bit of an early skirmish, that's going to bring horses like Dixie and Candyland and as you said, Whimsical Muse into the mix, I would say. And Whimsical Muse's turf win two back at Fairgrounds certainly would make her competitive. I guess I would be remiss in talking about this race and not mentioning Cardamon, who came back off the layoff with a really improved performance at Oaklawn on the slop, and that often portends turf ability. This filly's a half to Emollient. She's also a half to Hofburg, but she's a half to Emollient, who clearly was better, very best on turf or synthetic. So, you know, there's reason to believe that she might improve again going to the turf. Bill Mott is brutal in turf sprints, but this is a situation where this horse might get a really good trip stalking outside and kind of have the first shot to run at the leaders as the late markers start moving.
That's a fun. It's one of the races that made this a fun sequence. And here's the mile and a 16th, 10th race leading into the Mint Julep. We got about 4 minutes to close it out. Nick Tamaro with us. And I was going through this field, Nick, and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to find a price. And then I didn't really find a price. I ended up kind of having to acknowledge that Fearless and Top Seed were the most likely.
Yeah, and see, and I'm going to lean pretty heavily on Gunnet. I think that Gunnet is the horse.
He's okay.
To be in here.
Yep.
I respect Fearless. I'll use both Fearless and Top Seed, but I think the drop in class for Gunnet is just huge. And he had no chance last time whatsoever, being positioned outside on a very slow pace, fighting with Santana the whole way. You put Rosario in the saddle, that feels like it's going to end up working well. But yeah, I mean, I think when push comes to shove, this race is won by the 7, 8, or 10 about 98% of the time. So I don't see you having to go much beyond that. Top Seed might be the most interesting, because he'll probably be the best price of the three and stands to get the best trip, given that he's got some early zip. That was a good confidence-building win last time at Tampa, and Cordy Lannery certainly capable of getting this horse out and towards the early lead. We'll figure out what the hell's going on with Fearless in the opening half mile of these races, because he was in no man's land last time and ended up coming with a big late run. That was a particularly weak race for the level, so don't go too hog wild on Fearless. Of course, even though trained by somebody with a really high percentage win rate at Oaklawn, that was a race won by Dumpf, who two back was a $32,000 claimer. So not exactly the strongest of races, but I think, as I said, Fearless, Gunnet, or Top Seed, the winner comes from those three. I'm fascinated by the Mint Julep. I tweeted this morning that, you know, in a 14-horse field, it's amazing how little early speed there is in here.
Yeah.
You feel like that might really work to the advantage of Juliet Foxtrot on the inside, but you know, worth noting, in the last year, Brad Cox just won for 13 with a 20-cent ROI, bringing turf routers back off 180-plus day layoffs. So not something he's done really with any success at all. That's the case with both Juliet Foxtrot and Beau Recall. Now, both of them ran races on numerous occasions last year that would win this very, very easily. I only have eyes for Varenka in here. I have to bet Varenka. I'm going to hope that there's enough pace up front. I thought Varenka was very quietly an extremely useful filly last year who ran well multiple times, probably could have ended up going undefeated into the QE2 if not for a really tough trip in the Regret over this turf course, and she had no chance in the QE2. There was no pace in front of her. Cumbier Park was on the best part of the turf course. She was marooned wide the entire way. Grand Motion has three wins at the meet with horses off 180-plus day layoffs on the turf. That's the case here. Also the case with Secret Message, who I think is a little bit dangerous as well. Varenka's just going to be the right kind of price. So I'm hopeful to get alive in any of the multis with all the horses that are logical. 1, 2, 6, 9, 14 more than likely for me, with maybe a little bit accentuating a little bit the 1 and 9, figuring that Juliet Foxtrot is the best of horses that might be involved early, and Varenka's the one that I really want to focus on.
Well, and glad you mentioned Secret Message, who I took a shine to last year, and I thought when I came across her, I thought, ooh, you know, she could easily get lost in the board in this too.
Definitely. I mean, contention runs so deep. You're looking at a horse like Nay Lady Nay that, you know, for Chad Brown, in most situations, this horse would be bet down to, I mean, you know, 3-1 or so, and I don't think she'll get to that level at all. I think there's going to be a number of horses kind of clustered between 5-2 and 8-1, all of whom really have a big chance of winning. When you look through it, there's 14 of them in there, but there's really only one or two that you can say, okay, under no circumstances can I see this horse possibly winning. And that's what makes it just incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even mention, did we? Yeah, we. No, I think we mentioned most. We had La Signore we didn't talk about, and great. It's fun to have
Bell, who had the toughest trip last time in the race at La Signore won. You know, she's a horse that's capable.
Yep. No, it 14 horse, grade 3 mint julep. I tell you what, they're getting a lot for their 100,000 in these stakes the first few weeks.
I hope a few turf distaffers are still around for the Bogey next week at Belmont, because, man, everybody that seems to fit this niche, this grade 3 turf niche, is in here.
Well, in fact, you mentioned the Bogey, and they are just looking to close out the draw, close out the entries in New York, and you'll have an overnight for opening day at Belmont later. Nick, good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week.
Same to you, my friend. Thanks for having me.
NTAMM, N-T-A-M-M, 1215. As well as Brad Free, Rick Hammerly, Jay Pribman, Todd Mostoller, and Marty McGee. Casey on the board. Terrific week that flew by. They've all been flying by. Good luck this weekend. I see that Gus has got Churchill's Pick 5 analyzed. I'll put that at the website, and I'll take the day off on that front, and we'll save it for tomorrow. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Stay safe, stay healthy, and show some empathy.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you were racing 2-year-olds in California,